Welcome to Plot Pit, the show where we'll take almost anything and uncover a story within for you to use in your own tale-telling mediums of choice. From novels, novelettes, short stories, poems, songs, scripts, for screen and stage, honestly, it doesn't matter. We'll spec something and you might use it. I'm your host, William Atkinson, here with local author John LeMay. Hello, John. How you doing?
Hey, Will. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back.
All right. So today in the pit, we have maritime disasters, an influenza outbreak, and a lost pilot.
Sounds like a Clive Cussler book.
Now that's an interesting take. So let's begin the descent. Seeking Lost Pilot, Salt Lake City, Utah, December 17, 1922. Harry G. Bootstra, lost pilot of the Salt Lake Rock Springs Division of the local airmail service, is believed to have been seen over Portersville, Utah, 36 miles northeast of Salt Lake, late Friday afternoon. Seven planes sent out on a scouting expedition today returned at dusk this evening with no favorable reports. Basing their opinions on reports from Portersville, local airmail officials believe Bootstra is somewhere in the almost inaccessible snow-covered mountains near that town. So there's our first nugget for today, again, coming out of Salt Lake in 1922, December-ish, December 17. Then we have Boston, December 16. A mild epidemic of influenza on the battleship Florida has spread to other vessels at the Navy Yard here. 30 cases are reported on Florida, of which 16 were sent to the Naval Hospital in Chelsea. Somewhat reminiscent of the COVID outbreak that we had recently.
Yes, and then the in 1918 and 1919, they had the big Spanish influenza outbreak as well. So
this is right on the tail end of 21-22, where they had the second wave.
Yeah.
Okay, so our big story for Nuggets today, kind of a numerical coincidenting thing. You've got a tugboat that sinks in Lake Superior. And it's believed that 27 people die in that. I'll get to that story second momentarily. And then 27 societies pray for peace on Earth. Same article, New York Herald, or excuse me, same paper, New York Herald, coming out of 1922. It's quite an interesting little coincidence on the numbers there. 27 lost in Lake Tug wreck. Part of crew and passengers perish when craft sinks in storm off of Lizard Island. Now that's a name right there, Lizard Island. Survivors, including women overcome by cold, need medical aid. Bitter gale is raging, and rescue work is impossible because of extreme weather conditions. This comes out of Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, December 17, and here's the article. 27 persons are missing and believed to have drowned or died from exposure following the disaster which overtook the tug Reliance when it hit the rocks off of Lizard Island 4 days ago. This was the fear expressed by officials of the Superior Paper Company, owner of the tug, who, tonight, for the first time admitted that in addition to the crew of 14, the Reliance had carried 22 passengers. Seven survivors of the wreck landed here last night. Two others, Mr. and Mrs. John Harton, cooks, were suffering from cold and exposure, so much so that they were left at a station of the Algoma Central Railroad for medical attention by other survivors. And goes on further. The last scene of the missing 27 persons was Wednesday morning when the Reliance, battling through a blinding snowstorm, went on the rocks off of Lizard Island, stripped her propeller, and sank almost immediately. Captain D.A. Williams of this city and six others who were forward took a lifeboat, while nine others, including Mr. and Mrs. Harton, the cooks from earlier, took the other lifeboat. The second boat drifted for several hours in the storm and was blown ashore in the Canadian mainland 85 miles north of here. Mrs. Harton was so exhausted that the party was held up for 36 hours in an Indian shack before the party was able to start inland toward the railway, which was reached on Saturday. The survivors expressed little hope that the others survived the storm. The announcement by the company tonight said that in addition to the crew of 14, the Reliance carried 20 lumberjacks, an official of the company's forestry department, and an official from a fisheries agent who had been picked up by the Reliance on its last trip to the lumber camps. The missing men, it is said to have, by the survivors, left the wreck tug in a launch which was carried by the Reliance in addition to the two lifeboats. It is pointed out that if the missing men reached Lizard Islands in the snowstorm, they were without food. If they had reached an island where there were huts, their problem of fighting the cold would not be so great, but being without weapons, their chances for obtaining enough food were declared to be, quote, slender. So, Lizard Island, mm-hmm. in the middle of a blizzard,
yeah.
on Lake Superior. So we've got an influenza outbreak, a maritime disaster, with a lost pilot, in a also presumably a snowstorm, out in the middle of the snow-covered Utah mountains. What would we do with this?
I'm already going to pull from one of your supplemental stories, and I'll tell you why. But so you've also found an article from 1922 about the Maya?
Yes. Okay. So that was an ancient language was, let's see here, let me go back. Same 1922. The headline is Ancient Tongue is Restored with Aid of an Indian. Secret of Old Maya Inscriptions Expected to be Solved. This comes out of Charlottesville, Virginia, December 17th. And the particular is the Pensacola Journal.
Okay, so this is how I would spin it, because we've got all these mass deaths. And you know who loved mass death was the Aztec. Now, the Aztec, of course, they're not the Maya. You know, they're two different civilizations, but, you know, they're quasi-related, same area. You know, I'm sure a talented author could draw some sort of a connection between the Maya and the Aztec. So, the Aztec's deal was every 52 years, they had to commit a mass human sacrifice to keep the sun in the sky. And the reason I'm bringing this up is I once looked up the dates. When in the 20th century would the Aztecs have needed to commit their sacrifice? And I kid you not, the year was 1923.
Really?
Yeah, so we're right on the cusp of New Year's, all these December 1922 stories, you know, so like, this is where my mind is going, is all these deaths are somehow related to a secret sect of Aztecs that are trying to kill all these people and keep the sun in the sky.
This is certainly going in my head a direction with some sort of anthropologic mystery, cosmic horror kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm tying, you know, the Indiana Jones style adventurer into this.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happens to be that also in prep for the show, there were several other murders mm-hmm. and things going on.
Yeah.
I came across one out of New Jersey. There was a case of husband who was also the owner of a local circus that was murdered. And the wife was accused with her brother of being accomplices to this, specifically a murder for hire scenario where they offered the guy who admitted to killing the husband or the circus showman $1,000 for knocking him off.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a headline about mass murders.
Mm-hmm.
There was. It was either the Wheeling Intelligencer or it was the New York Herald or the Pensacola Journal. It's one of those three. Front page. So Aztecs, Mayans, 1922, mass murder, 1923 sacrifice for every 52 years, you said?
Every 52 years. And that 1923 was just when the 52nd year would have fallen on their calendar.
Very curious.
Yeah.
Okay, so who would be lead to a story like this?
So I'm already thinking that the pilot whose plane was lost, he had the Maya translation on his plane because he was a mail carrier, right? Was
yeah.
It? Okay. So that's my thought. He's the mail carrier. He's the one who has that translation, so they shoot his plane down or sabotage it, whatever, and he would be the hero, the pilot.
Okay. Yeah. So we have a postal worker.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, he flies airplanes, so you know, he's adventurous. He probably served in World War I.
Would make sense.
He has a past, and so that's his action hero roots. He served in World War I.
So that actually ties into the influenza thing.
Mm-hmm.
So he's coming back from Europe.
Yeah.
Okay. From the trenches. Okay.
Yep.
So trench warfare scenario, but he's a pilot, so he's kind of like, you know, behind the front line. He's coming back. That's the tie-in with the influenza, the Spanish flu.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the initial outbreak, but this is set in 1922 to 1923. So now we have this second wave situation coming into Boston. How would you tie Boston to Utah?
See, that's where we get into some trouble, and that's a tough one. You know, rich people live everywhere, so you know it's probably some evil rich person who's descended from the Aztecs and they have property in both locations, perhaps. Or perhaps just the Native American who did the translation of the Mayan article. He could have been from Utah or something, perhaps. I don't know.
Well, it would make sense if we're coming off of World War One, okay, the naval base. There's got to be some form of military intelligence from the Navy that mm-hmm. would be involved. And the particular Native American who was helping translate could have ties to Washington, D.C., which would be close yep. to Boston, right? Or, you know, within the military ranks in that channeling of intelligence community. And then you would then have the translation of this tablet or this inscription from the Mayans detailing out, I don't know, what specifically. Would we want to go with a story where every 52 years you have this mass sacrifice, but it has to be done in a certain sequential manner?
Exactly. I think that sounds exactly right. And the bad guys need to know what that manner is. Yeah.
So if we already have these mass or all of these murders happening in 22, is there a prep?
Maybe so. Or maybe the Mayans knew how to stop it. They know how to reverse the evil ritual.
Okay.
If you want to go, see, that's always the problem we have with these stories is we have two really good ideas, but we can only use one of them.
This is one of the things that you were talking about yeah. in the 21 Gun series that, yeah. you know, you're authoring.
Similarly, you know, we could ignore World War One and go to another more appropriate conflict in the region of the Aztecs, which is the Mexican Revolution between 1910 and 1920. And Pancho Villa was also assassinated in 1923. You know, something to play with there. So we could forget all about World War One and say that this male pilot, maybe he was one of Pancho Villa's fighters in the 19-teens, and he was a pilot for him.
How about we zero in on the Native American, the Indian, that is able to help translate?
Mm-hmm.
That's the individual for the action. That's like sure. the point of view character.
Okay.
So we have this Indian who is serving in the revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Through that experience, he stumbles on the Rosetta Stone of the ancient Mayan inscriptions.
Oh, that's a good thought. Yeah.
Okay. So this is where he figures out how to do the translation stuff. And in the process of this, he passes this inscription translation mm-hmm. off to this airmail pilot in Utah, who's supposed to go to the East Coast mm-hmm. with it yeah. for whatever reason. And if we are looking to stop this mass murder or this sacrifice, right, of the evil cult that's...
Yeah.
Did the Mayans have... So 2012, right, you had the end of the world type scenario or, you know, the 2012 apocalypse. Obviously, it didn't happen, but it was based upon the Mayan calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything that we could tie to that?
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so. And then I once was curious if 2012 lined up with the 52-year sacrifice, and of course it didn't. But because I think the next one would be 1975, and then the next one after that would be 2027. Okay.
What about the plane? Would there be something supernatural about the plane? Maybe going through some sort of portal, and then we end up in like a H.P. Lovecraft cosmic horror sci-fi twist.
It could be, and it could be that the Rosetta Stone he carried with him did something.
What might that be?
Well, you mentioned the Rosetta Stone to translate the Mayan language, and maybe it's supernatural and it interacts with the portal or something.
Okay. So we have a portal in Utah, northeast
of... Oh, over Skinwalker Ranch. That would, because Skinwalker Ranch is in Utah, even though not where the newspaper said he was, but, you know.
True, true. So the newspaper was putting it, northeast of Salt Lake, yeah. out in Portersville. But, I mean, tell us a little bit about Skinwalker Ranch.
Yeah, Skinwalker Ranch, I mean, it sounds like it's all about Native American werewolves, but it's not. Skinwalker Ranch is really all about portals and UFOs. And, you know, they had a few Skinwalker-related sightings, but really it's UFOs and aerial phenomena. So, and it's somewhere in Utah. I don't remember where, but I mean, you could make the argument that, oh, Utah is a hot spot for these portals, and that would explain the pilot perhaps. And
okay. So we have a blizzard in the Great Lakes that causes a tugboat to run aground,
mm-hmm.
sink. 27 individuals allegedly or are suspected of drowning or being exposed to extreme cold and not able to make it out. We have then kind of a global hopping scenario coming out of Central America and Mexico into the central U.S., right, with Utah, and going up into the Great Lakes. Maybe there's a race to the North Pole.
Ooh, I like it. Yeah, the pole openings, yeah.
Okay. Ooh, that ties into that admiral. What was his name?
Admiral Byrd.
Admiral yeah. Byrd. Yes. So you got the pole opening on the South Pole. Maybe it goes the other way. So look up
Admiral Byrd real quick.
And if just, you start yeah. at Lake Ontario up there at the Lizard Islands. Okay. So with that name, you could be tapping into, you know, the lizard people. Okay.
Yeah.
Which live underground for whatever reason. And because lizards are cold-blooded, right, they're trying to escape cold, so they live underground. But there's some form of history around Lizard Island, if we were to go into the fictitious world, right, and concoct our own mythology around that particular locale. And so the passengers that were on board that were specifically mentioned were Mr. and Mrs. Harton, who were cooks. I guess we could go a comic route. Maybe they were cooking up lizard stew.
Yeah.
And pissed off the wrong lizard god.
Well, lizard gods, I mean, not exactly a lizard, but Quetzalcoatl was the feathered serpent. So, I mean, if you could tie in Quetzalcoatl of the Aztec to Lizard Island somehow. And also in Wisconsin, they have a place called Azatlan, Wisconsin, which Azatlan was the homeworld of the Aztec peoples located to the north. So, I mean, you could argue something about the Aztec homeworld around the Great Lakes region if you really stretched it and you really wanted to.
Okay. Or we could rewind the clock to back when certain parts of the United States was underwater.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Okay, so you have like an antediluvian type world, okay, where you've got this maritime disaster that happens in Utah a long time ago. Mm-hmm. One of those individuals, I don't know, was some, you know, ancient wizard or wise man or sage or whatever, and hides the key to these portals for whatever reason in Utah. And here's where you have this World War One pilot. We'll go back to that idea. And you have this World War One pilot who that's where he gets all of his piloting skills. Mm-hmm. And he grew up in that area, hearing all of this mythology in today's 1922 world. Okay. And so you've kind of got this dichotomy across time. And he's now in airmail service. And then because he's familiar with the mail that normally goes through this area, right? He sees this letter that's differently posted. And it happens to be tied to the Indian who's going to be translating this Mayan inscription. Okay. And you've got that feather god serpent that you were talking about.
Yeah, Quetzalcoatl.
Quetzalcoatl. Okay.
They also had lizard gods too for the Aztec. And I don't remember what his name was, but there was a lizard god we could also play with as opposed to Quetzalcoatl, which was more of a snake.
Sure. Yeah, Ancient Aliens does a lot in that Quetzalcoatl vein of things. So this pilot recognizes that the postage for this particular item is significantly different than anything he has ever seen. He infers through some means that it's tied to this antediluvian chieftain who hid the keys to portals or something. And so he deliberately goes off course looking for something. Okay. And that's where the story of this lost pilot taps into play.
Sure.
Then you could end up with the portal, right? He disappears. So we've tied a maritime disaster of, you know, antediluvian world where you've got this ancient chieftain who is coming back from hiding something. Mm-hmm. And that's where he gets lost at sea. And maybe the pilot specifically going to look for his bones because it's rumored that he had it, the map of these portals or whatever, globally tattooed on his head.
Yeah, but that's actually true of Pancho Villa, had a map tattooed on the back of his head, allegedly.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not really relevant to our story, but I mean, it does happen. Like tattooing a body and yeah.
Now that's Pancho Villa. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
So that may or may not be true, but you know, Pancho Villa for certain, his grave was dug up and vandalized. I don't remember what year it was, but somebody stole his head, and they said the reason he stole his head was because he had tattooed a map to the Tayopa silver mine on the back of his head, of which you wouldn't know it once the hair regrew. And you know, I mean, who knows if that's true, but that's just one of those folk tales that might be true, but for sure his head was stolen.
Okay. Now that's, grave robbery.
Yeah.
Grave robbery, an influenza outbreak.
Yeah.
Maritime
again,
disaster.
Again, the grave robbery, though, he died in 1923, but the grave robbery was probably like later in the 20s. I don't remember when.
So Pancho Villa's head.
Mm-hmm.
So we already have kind of a time. If we were to run with this antediluvian chieftain with the portals, and then the lost pilot, then fast forward, we could be playing with the portals crossing time.
Mm-hmm.
And so this could tap then into Pancho Villa's head's robbery. Do you have the date yet?
Not yet. But the guy who stole it supposedly was this assassin named Emil Holmdahl, who fought in the revolution. So that's kind of interesting, too.
Okay. So we have an Indian Native American who's going to translate a ancient Mayan inscription. We have a lost pilot. We have potentially a grave robbery of Pancho Villa's head. We have a maritime disaster and an outbreak of influenza.
And the head was stolen in 26, which was around the same time that Admiral Byrd did his flight over one of the poles, you know.
Okay.
If you wanted to tie those things together, I don't know.
And Admiral Byrd was a naval officer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's where you have the influenza outbreak, is the Boston Naval Yard.
Mm, yeah.
So Admiral Byrd is prepping for his trip to Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, here we go. Here we go. Here's an idea. Toss this out. You've got this Indian who finds this ability to translate the Mayan inscriptions. And he's passing this off to the Postal Service. The Postal Service, through the transition of the packages, goes all the way up to this pilot in Salt Lake who's supposed to transport. He gets blown off of course, or deliberately goes off course. Maybe the pilot is part of the evil sect that's trying to destroy the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we're going to go global catastrophe with this. Eventually, somehow, that translation gets put on that tugboat coming out of Michigan. And that's that whole inscription scenario is what gives Admiral Byrd the idea of going to Antarctica. And then he masks that whole thing with the excuse of just, you know, trying to get to the South Pole and exploring it, you know, so that way the U.S. will, you know, fund the expedition. But in his mind, he's really, his whole goal is to prove or disprove the underworld coming out of the South Pole.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's his whole goal. But he gets it from this tablet.
Yeah. And the Aztecs and the Maya, they did talk about a frozen land to the north, not their homeland in that case. But then, you know, of course, that's mythology. I couldn't possibly pronounce or remember the name, but that is part of their folklore. So,
and we do have the pole flip.
That too.
Okay. And so north could have been south at some point.
Yeah. And Dan Byrd in 26, he did go to the North Pole. If we want to stick to North Pole, because it's up by the Great Lakes and all that, but.
Okay, so if he was in the North Pole, or, you know, not in the North Pole, but at the North Pole, there maybe the North and South Poles are connected in some way other than just the geophysical nature of the planet. With the connection, I mean, you're going from Central America you know, right up the chain, right up through Utah, up into Canada, right? So what mythological creatures exist on this path?
Do you mean like in the frozen north?
Yeah.
There's all sorts.
I mean, you got Sasquatch, right? Sasquatch. Or Bigfoot up in the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing I've learned is every type of cryptid is pretty much on every continent. So, I mean, you could play with dinosaurs, lizard men, Sasquatch, anything you really wanted to. So,
what would you take it with?
What would I take it with? I don't know. I feel like cryptids and monsters might be too much for this story. Now, somewhere else we could go with this, believe it or not, is outer space. And here's how. So we're talking about the 1918-1919 Spanish flu epidemic. Thomas Edison actually speculated, for real, you can't find the source, but it's out there somewhere. Thomas Edison speculated that maybe this virus came from outer space.
Really?
I mean, it's one thing if anybody else says that, but when it's Thomas Edison, that gives it at least something to make it special.
Some form of credibility.
Yeah, so you could go, okay, something about Quetzalcoatl and the ancient aliens and this influenza is like a plague from outer space that, you know, Quetzalcoatl, the space alien, is bringing to Earth for the mass sacrifice. You know, it's just another thing, another avenue that one could explore.
Very cool. Okay, so we have some characters. We've got some geography. We have a potential item.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
this a MacGuffin, as they call it. In Indiana Jones, they call it a MacGuffin.
Okay, so we got the MacGuffin, the Mayan inscription. Mm-hmm. What does it look like?
Probably just a stone with the curious symbols on it.
Large, small?
I would say in an action story, you want it to be small enough the main character can pick it up and run with it.
So Indiana Jones down the hall with the rolling boulder.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So we have something small with strange symbols on it and potentially from outer space.
Well, the virus is from outer space, possibly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So where else could this story go? If we were to wipe the slate clean, we've gotten quite a bit there. And we went off into some areas of like sci-fi or, you know, global catastrophe, antediluvian time travel type stuff. If we were to try to speculate a story in a more realistic sense, in today's world, you know, reality based, where would you take this?
Well, yeah, so, okay, doing away with the space aliens and the monsters, you could still play with the Aztec mythology. You could somehow tie in the influenza outbreak to the Aztecs somehow, like maybe they were the first ones to suffer the influenza plague and nobody knew it until they discovered that stone, you know, and somebody, maybe they have a mass cure for the influenza and they don't want to. Something with the stone would have something to do with the mass cure that would get in the way of them making a pharmaceutical profit off of it or something.
Ooh.
You know?
Ooh, now that's interesting. Yeah. The vaccine take on
exactly,
this.
Exactly, yeah.
We've got the mass epidemic of influenza, the Spanish flu, 1919, second wave, 1921, 1922, end of World War One. Obviously, coming off of the Spanish flu epidemic of 19, there's going to be some form of push for vaccinations or some form of pharmaceutical intervention, especially when the second wave starts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Coming out of Boston in December of 22, and the Mayans inscription has the cure.
It could, or we could just throw out the Mayan inscription too. I mean, that's another one.
Let's keep it with the Indian, the translator, because he's able to translate this. He's thrown into the limelight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, does he have an agenda?
He could, but I don't have one for him, but he certainly could. My agenda is going to, the twist would be, okay, instead of the bad guy wanting to make money off the vaccine, the vaccine is worse than the influenza epidemic, and the bad guy wants everyone to take this vaccine that might, you know, kill them after a while.
Okay.
That's another angle, as opposed to he just wants to make money off of a good vaccine that works.
So we have the potential for the sinister group, the Illuminati, looking for population control.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. Coincidentally, this turns around just about the same time as the Bolshevik Revolution in Soviet Russia. We don't have any story specifically tied to that, but there is a a great deal of resource material that could be happening over in Europe. And that's something that our listeners might be interested to know if they were to take this and run with it.
Mm-hmm. And we may not come up to an ending with this, but somebody else might.
Sure. And that's the whole point of the show, yeah, folks, is really just to brainstorm out possible ideas and new reference material for anybody who's interested in storytelling, yeah, of any type.
Because these are all real articles and real stories. We're just putting a spin on it, you know, so we can't stake a legal claim on it that, oh, it was my idea to do a story on this Mayan article. Well, the article's out there. You know, anybody can take it and just spin their own story from it.
And that's my hope, is that, yeah, someday somebody out there listening will take these ideas and then submit them, come in on the show, and tell us what you did with the story.
Mm, that would be cool.
All right, folks. Well, there you go. We have maritime disasters, snow-based thematics, a lost pilot, an influenza outbreak, among a bunch of other things, including a grave robbing and a stolen head. So take it and run with it, folks.